This is episode number 25 with one of the most dynamic duos in franchising today, Josh Skolnick and Zach Butler. Welcome to the Path to Freedom podcast. I'm your host, Wes Barefoot, where it's my mission to help aspiring entrepreneurs and existing business owners take control of their lives and create freedom for themselves through business ownership. Each episode, I'll be exploring the strategies and tactics of other successful entrepreneurs that have created freedom in their own lives while sharing what I'm learning along my own path to freedom. I'm glad you're here. Let's drop in. My guests this episode are two amazing guys that I've had the pleasure of getting to know very well over the past several years, Zach Butler and Josh Skolnick, both of which have amazing entrepreneurial stories on their own and have also formed a tremendous partnership and gone on to successfully build and grow numerous other ventures, which they talk about in detail in this episode. Combined, Zach and Josh are two brilliant entrepreneurs that share a lot of insight in this episode into, you know, what it takes to believe in yourself, have confidence in yourself, to take that leap into entrepreneurship. They also share from their viewpoint what a franchisor should really be doing to support their franchisees and set them up for success, something that's incredibly important to anyone that's considering getting into a franchise business. We have a few laughs along the way, and I have no doubt everyone tuning in is going to get a kick out of this episode with Josh and Zach. So with that, we'll go ahead and drop into this week's episode with my good friends, Josh Skolnick and Zach Butler. You guys both have a lot going on individually and combined. So you're super busy, both of you. Zach, just found out you're a brand new father. So congratulations on that. Super exciting and very happy for you. So, but again, I really appreciate you guys making the time to do this, and I'm excited for you to both share your stories with the audience. I know everyone that listens is going to get a ton of value from, you know, hearing about your experience, everything you've learned through your entrepreneurial journeys, and also the things that you guys are working on and, you know, in the process of launching. So very excited to get into this today. I want to start out and give each of you kind of the opportunity to tell a little bit of your entrepreneurial story, how you got into business ownership in the first place. I know franchising's been a big part of both of your entrepreneurial journeys. So I want you to talk a little bit about, you know, how you got into franchising, how that's played a role. So Josh, maybe if you don't mind leading us off and just kind of tell us, you know, how you got in as an entrepreneur and where that's led you to today.
Yeah, Wes, I appreciate it. As you said, you know, Josh Skolnick, and involved today in many franchise systems. And, you know, to start off by, you know, how my entrepreneurial journey really began, I grew up in a blue collar household and really come from generations of blue collar, you know, working individuals, as you look through the generations of the Skolnick family. And in my early teenage years, my father and I butt heads a lot on job sites. He was in the hardwood flooring business. So I ended up segueing off and mowing lawns in a local neighborhood where I grew up. And I'll never forget at that time, you know, being about 10, 11 years old, my father told me, you know, I wish you the best of luck, but business ownership isn't always as easy as you think it is. And I set out to really prove him wrong and mowed lawns through the local neighborhood, built that business through middle school and high school. And through high school, spent many of those years bartering with teachers, getting good passing grades for landscape services, and none of that stuff would fly today in today's
That's awesome.
Age, but it worked well back then in the, you know, in the late 90s. So with that being said, you know, I built that business, graduated high school in 2002, had several people working for me, made a few acquisitions of some small local landscape companies in Eastern Pennsylvania, just outside of Philadelphia, and grew a customer base to over 400 full service accounts. I had so many properties to maintain that I ended up bringing some mulch blowing technology from the West Coast to the East Coast around 2004, 2005 time. And I was one of the first guys to bring that type of technology to the East Coast, as I had said. And it caught a lot of attention amongst other commercial landscape companies and large-scale property managers and management companies that I formed another commercial mulch blowing operation under a brand name called Mulch Monsters. And our slogan was, you prep it, we spread it. And, you know, these large companies, contractors, landscape companies, they would edge, weed, and prep the flower beds, and we'd come in and blow the mulch down. We'd do playground chips, compost as well, and topsoil and stone. So I built that on a national level from Long Island, New York, down to Northern Virginia, and ended up selling my landscaping business to focus on that in 2007. And over the course of the next year, from spring of 07 through spring of 08, I had a lot of my existing landscape clients that were very interested in getting tree work done. And I had never done tree work on clients' properties, but only gave referrals to them for people that could provide those services. And June 7th, 2008, I did a favor for an existing client by taking down a dead elm tree for $2,500 and ironically sold $20,000 worth of work up and down the street that Saturday. So that's where my journey began into the tree business, because Monday morning I was in the tree business and built a business that did north of $1 million in revenue in the first 12 months.
Wow.
Built a multi-million dollar operation in a very short period of time. And after about 3 to 4 years without ever taking down a tree or actually performing the services within the tree care industry, I made a decision to franchise that. And that's really where my journey began in franchising, and had an opportunity shortly after franchising that business to obviously meet Zach Butler and work together on development for Monster Tree Service, and have successfully awarded over 200 franchise units in that business to date. And then in 2018, got involved and acquired a controlling interest in a brand called Redbox Plus, which is a unique patented product for the waste industry, where we manufacture and assemble containers with two portable restrooms on the front of them and service contractors across North America. We've successfully awarded in the last 24 months over 185 franchise units with that business, and are actually in the process together, Zach and I, along with one other business partner, launching a new umbrella company to acquire controlling interest in franchise companies in the service space that we can really take out there and build on a national level. And one of the first ventures under that new umbrella of service brands is going to be a roofing business called Mighty Dog Roofing that we launch in September of 2020. So I'll pass it over to Zach, because I want to make sure Zach can explain a little bit about his journey, because he's had a fantastic journey as well. Cut from the same cloth as myself, growing up in a blue collar household as well, and you know, really a great partner to work with.
Yeah, and I mean, so many impressive things that you've done, Josh, and to echo your point, Zach, you've got just as impressive as a track record. So we'll let you share that story, and then I've definitely want to circle back to a few things for both of you, just in terms of, you know, how you've been able to do what you've done, you know, up to this point in your entrepreneurial careers. But yeah, Zach, go ahead and give us a little bit of your background as well, and how you got started as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, before I kick that off, Josh, just, you know, we have 197 territories for Redbox officially as of Wednesday. So
I appreciate it. You're moving them so fast. I can't count that.
It'll probably be 198 before we even wrap this podcast up.
Maybe. We'll see.
Deal.
similar to Josh, I'm from a blue collar entrepreneurial family. I'm from the farm country of Northeast Nebraska. My grandpa and dad have run a livestock auction barn since 1969. And that's where I grew up in my early days, running around chasing cows with whips and getting in trouble. And I realized that I didn't want to do that at the time. And I, when I got to college, I took a part-time job with a nutrition company that had evolved from GNC. So one of the gentleman that owned the top grossing GNCs in the world was actually based out of the Midwest. Mm-hmm. And he was forced to sell back his GNCs and started a concept called Complete Nutrition. And I had come on there as a part-time, I think I was 18, and I was good at that. And about a month in, I don't know what happened or can't remember back then, but I became the manager by default. I think somebody got fired and they said, well, this is the only guy we got. And I really excelled at that. Yep, I was good at that, and really took the bull by its horns. I think I stopped going to class less and started working more because the money was so good. And there was five corporate stores at that time, and then they began to franchise. And I was running the top location on the corporate level for that. So I went to the actual founder of that brand and said, hey, I you make way more money on me as a franchisee than a manager. You should co-sign an SBA loan. And he did.
So he co-signed for you.
Co-signed.
And you bought it and became a franchisee.
Exactly. So at 21, I picked up, moved myself to Tallahassee, Florida from Lincoln, Nebraska. Didn't know a soul. And did $1.3 million first year open and paid off the SBA loan. And that was young in my days and in my youth, grew really fast. I think in the next 24 months, I had 7 locations through some acquisitions and new startups. And I think at the peak, we were doing almost $11 million in revenue.
Across 7 locations?
Around 7 locations. No idea what I was doing. Had no infrastructure, no CFO. I was just working 100 hours a week. And essentially, that's when things really started to really unravel for me. Mm. I wasn't controlling finance as well. Wasn't getting really support on the back end for that type. And essentially, it was just plummeting. And I had a good friend that owned around 25 locations. And I had the opportunity to come onto his organization with some equity and through some acquisition. And then we grew that from 25 to 68 locations across the country. And there was 3 of us partners on that company. And that was where I really learned a bulk of not just how to grow franchises, but how to be operationally efficient.
Yeah.
In the supplement world, Amazon really came in and turned it on its head. So you had to really count pennies to make it work. So we got really good at data management and running locations with less infrastructure. After that, the overall franchise got acquired by private equity, and they made some changes that I was not a fan of, but my partner was. And I said, well, you know, I think that's just time for me to leave. So I sold my equity and had no idea what I wanted to do. I remember the first day not having to go to work for the first time in my entire life.
And so how old were you at this time when you sold your equity and Complete Nutrition?
I was 30.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a weird day. I woke up and I remember sitting on my couch. I think I was drinking an energy drink, and I just said, I have nothing to do today.
And was that a good feeling or a bad feeling for you?
Oh, it was terrifying. I'm a go 100 miles an hour. If I don't have anything to do, I get a little depressed.
Yeah, yeah.
So I started reaching out to different – I was in a bunch of peer-to-peer measurement groups, and I started reaching out to lots of CEOs and offering to buy them lunch and – had a lot of job offers. And then turns out the founder of a co-founder of Complete Nutrition reached out to me and said, hey, I have this, I'm starting this franchise development company. Do you want to come on and sell franchises? I said, no, it sounds like the black market of franchising. I'm not interested. And about 3 weeks later, he called me back again. He goes, I just don't get it. I'm not interested. And then he called me a third time and says, hey, I have this new brand that we're about to sign. It's called Monster Tree Service. I think you'll like the founder, and I think you'll really like the brand. And I was big into woodworking and tools at the time, and
okay.
I'm an outdoors guy. And I was like, I could really like to move back to Omaha. That'd be great for Nebraska. And so I pulled the trigger on that. And 6 days into taking that job and it sort of starting, we had a conference that I had to go to in Cancun, which was a tough life, right?
And, yeah, you're like, hey, maybe this franchise sells gig isn't so bad after all.
Yep. And that's where I met Josh. I remember we just talked about this the other day, Josh. I said, just to think back, we met in the pool at Cancun for the first time ever, drinking drinks and talking about franchising and business. And here we are today and what we've accomplished.
Well, and I was going to say this at the top, and I don't mean to cut you off, but it's only appropriate that I have the two of you guys on the podcast together. I don't know if you guys even realize this or not, but you both have the exact same picture as your LinkedIn profile. It's a picture of the two of you together, but it's the exact same
Is
picture.
It really?
Yeah, I got a kick out of that. I mean, you guys are you know, a dynamic duo, right? I mean, it's been a hell of a partnership that you guys have formed over the years.
So I'll tell this quick story and I'll let you go. So I had my 1 year wedding anniversary on August 3rd and my wife was not happy. Number one, she was on the phone with Josh. I bought a bottle of champagne and I bought it right next to the flowers, not even thinking. And I turned it around and it's the champagne that has the names on it. And it had Josh. And she goes, really? Just a 6 day? And I was like, I really didn't even know.
That's hilarious. That is, it's a pretty good, I know there's a wine brand called Josh, and it's pretty good wine, actually. So maybe that was their champagne.
Yeah, just the other night, Kaylee sent me that photo, and she said, apparently Zach wants you at our anniversary dinner with us. And she sent me a picture of the bottle, and I'm like, this guy, man, he's going to end up divorced if he doesn't let it go.
That's great. So you met Josh. You started with Franchise Fastlane. So I actually had Ryan Zink on the podcast a few weeks ago. So that's how you kind of transitioned, because you'd owned franchises before, your Complete Nutrition franchises. But that's how you kind of made the transition into franchise sales. Met Josh. You guys started working together on growing Monster Tree, which is an awesome concept. Josh already kind of shared some of the success that you guys have had there. And then now you're partnered with him in these other ventures as well. What would you attribute the success that you and Josh have had together as partners? Is it just you guys think alike, are driven by the same kind of things? Or I mean, what would you say? Because, I mean, you guys kind of hit it off from day one, and it's been off to the races ever since.
Yeah, so I think there are a couple things that I was thinking about this the other day. I think it's three major things. The first is there are some people that you meet, you're just on the same wavelength as. Mm-hmm. That. So whenever Josh and I do presentations or host calls, we don't need to prepare. We just chat and we're good. And we can be successful at that. And I think that's just because some subconscious level, we just think alike that way.
Yeah.
The other part is values. I think like you said, I think we're driven by the same things. And then the third for me is just trust. I know that whenever what we got going on, Josh is going to do everything he can to get that part done and put 100% effort in. I hope he has the same for me. I think he does anyways.
I do. Yeah, Wes, I'll add, you know, for me, it's a big part in the values. Everything that I do and the people that I want to work with, you know, really starts with a foundation of a high level of honesty and integrity. And, you know, one of the things that as a very successful franchisor, when Zach was just on the development side of things and, you know, having to rely on myself and the rest of the organization, he knew that, you know, we would back up everything that he was doing. Mm-hmm. So as he was, you know, working candidates through the process, and, you know, if there was a successful award made on, you know, a territory or multiple territories to a franchisee, that he knew that we were going to make him look good on the back end. And that, you know, we were going to work tirelessly to make that person successful. And that's a big part of the why in why we made the decision to partner together on future brands and, you know, really put a very strong focus on operational excellence. We understand that we know how to attract the right candidates. We know how to take them through a very good process that helps them to identify if, you know, our business opportunity is the right fit for them. But more mm-hmm. importantly, what happens post-transaction is so much more important. And that's really where we're putting a very strong focus is that, you know, I always say, and like Zach says, like we're the type of people and, you know, Wes, we've spent plenty of time together, the three of us, like we can all sit down, have a beer, just shoot the shit for hours. Like it's the same thing when we look at, you know, our relationship together and even the franchisees we work with, like we want to work with people that we can get up and we can answer their calls when they're calling with a question. And that, right. You know, they're the type of people that we build personal relationships with. Like Zach would tell you, you know, the franchisees that are in a system, we communicate with them regularly.
Yep.
And, you know, we know all of them by, you know, first name. We know, you know, their spouses, their kids, their pets' names. You know, there's just this very family atmosphere and feeling to everything that we're doing.
Well, and I'm glad that you brought that up. To me, it's so key, right? And I've been on the development side, you know, where Zach was. And even now as a consultant, I mean, it's so important, you know, if you're representing a particular franchise brand and you're taking someone through the investigative process, I mean, it's your role to educate them on the business, right? And what it's going to take to be successful, but you're also educating them on what they can expect to get from the franchisor that's going to help them be successful. And if they don't get that on the back end, if they don't actually get the support that you're telling them they're going to get, then, you know, it's a problem. And being in a sales or a development role, you know, you have to have confidence that what you're telling a candidate is what's actually going to happen once they become a franchisee. It makes your life as a development rep much easier when you have that sort of confidence, knowing the franchisor is going to deliver on everything that they say they're going to. And same thing with me as a consultant, right? I mean, this is huge decisions that people are making to invest in a franchise, right? Life-changing decisions. So I want to feel very confident that if I introduce someone to a brand, they're practicing whatever it is that they're preaching, right? And it doesn't mean the franchisee is not going to have to put in the work, but it means they're getting exactly what they're signing up for in terms of, you know, the franchisors delivering on what they've promised that they will. And I think that's key. And to your point, Josh, I mean, it really is. It's like a family. You know, I think that's the way that it should be done. Certainly not the case in all franchise systems out there, but, you know, that's a big part of what we're looking for in franchises that we continue to invest in is, yeah, I want to make sure the business makes sense, the economics make sense. But, you know, if that trust factor isn't there with the franchisor and the people running the company, I'm not interested.
Well, Wes, I think in franchising right now, I think there's almost an epidemic where there's people that have figured out how to sell franchises well.
Yeah.
And I think Josh and I have done that. The problem with that is you can take any brand off the street and you can sell those franchises.
Yeah.
And that's a short-term buck you can put in your pocket. And we've always looked out long-term, like when we think out 10 years, where do we want to be? And it's going to require us to make sure that every unit that we sell, we have to be able to open those units and make them successful. And that's where we have no interest in selling 300 units in 1 year and then never opening them. And that's where we have a pretty proud track record that we've sold over 100 units in 1 year with several brands, and we've opened 100% of those.
It's such a good point. I mean, and I would agree, it's an issue in franchising today, right? There are franchise systems. There's also, you know, third parties that in some cases get involved, and they're very motivated to sell a bunch of franchises. And there's not always as much motivation to actually get those franchises open or support them in a long-term manner. And, you know, when I'm coaching someone through this process, it's you want to understand the initial support that you're going to get as a franchisee. But a huge part of the evaluation is understanding what's the long-term vision for the franchisor and what can you expect to get on an ongoing basis in terms of support. And I would agree, there's too many franchises out there today that maybe don't put as much emphasis on, you know, what happens after someone signs a franchise.
Wes here. You may have noticed there's a franchising theme to this podcast. And that's because franchising has had a massive impact on my life. And it's the very reason I'm walking my own path to freedom. In fact, one of my companies is a franchise consulting company where I work with people to help them understand franchising and determine if it might be a good fit for them. And if it is something they want to explore, then I help them navigate the entire investigative process and ultimately find a franchise business that's a great match for them. You know, the fact of the matter is there are thousands and thousands of franchise businesses out there today. And like anything, there are good ones and there are bad ones. Even out of the many, many great franchise companies, not every one of them would necessarily be a good fit for you. You know, buying a franchise is a huge decision, and you don't want to wing it. I've helped many people buy franchise businesses over the years, and my wife and I have bought and owned franchises today, and we plan to keep investing in franchise businesses. I love helping people understand this process and help them find a business that's going to be a great fit for them and help them accomplish their goals and ultimately create that freedom in their life that we're all looking for. The best part of all of this is that my services are free to the people I work with. And while I do love to contribute to charities and other great causes, I'm not a nonprofit. I'm compensated by the franchise companies I work with when I introduce them to someone that ends up becoming one of their franchisees. It's very similar to real estate, but with franchises. I have the privilege of working with hundreds and hundreds of the best franchise companies out there across practically every industry. So I can be absolutely confident that when I recommend someone to look at a franchise company, I'm introducing them to a very credible and proven company with a solid business model and great support. So if you think you might be interested in learning more about franchising and seeing if it might be right for you, I'd love to speak with you. Get in touch with me by email at wes@path2freedom.com, path2frdm.com. And also check out my website at path2freedom.com, spelled the same way. where I've got a ton of resources, both franchise and non-franchise related, that will help you start down your own path to freedom. And of course, subscribe to and follow the podcast for more great advice about business ownership. And if you know anyone else that might be interested in speaking with me, please share this podcast with them. Thanks for listening to my shameless plug. Now let's drop back into the episode.
You know, I know you guys, I know your companies, you guys do it the right way. And it's kind of a good segue into something I wanted you guys to speak to today, you know, because you've successfully built large franchise organizations in numerous industries. You're in the process of doing it even more industries. So what are some of the common themes that you guys have learned over the years and realize are absolutely critical to build a successful franchise organization? You know, what are kind of the key components of a strong franchise system, regardless of the business or the industry that the particular franchise is in?
Support. And I'll take this first, Zach, and then I know you have a lot to add to this from your experience as a franchisee. I believe as a franchisor, we have a fiduciary responsibility to our franchisees to provide a high level of service, support, and systems, along with all of the resources so that they can focus on the things that make them money in their business. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for Monster Tree Service, that's sales and production. So if they can focus on sales and production, we'll have resources and people in place to help with all the other items so that they're not trying to wear too many hats, and that we recognize that, you know, franchising, while there's a system and a process in place, it can't just be a one-size-fits-all type methodology in the way that you work with franchisees. You have to really look at it more from a SWOT analysis perspective and understand what are the strengths and the weaknesses of each individual, because it is our job as we bring people through the process to identify, number one, are they the right fit culturally for the business? And then number two, you know, are they the right fit for the, you know, for the industry and mm-hmm. the people that are involved in it? And are they comfortable with the services that we offer? And so I always find myself in CEO calls ahead of a discovery day speaking to candidates and saying, listen, this is, while it's called a discovery day, it's truly a confirmation day, because you really need to be coming to us with two main focuses. And that's making sure that culturally you fit our team, our organization, you trust the people that are going to support you. And then secondly, that you're comfortable with the services that we offer. You know, when we look at Redbox Plus, in that business, focusing on the things that make you money, it's sales, and then it's the rentals or turns, whatever you want to phrase it. You know, mm-hmm. franchisees call them different, you know, call them sales, they're called turns. There's sure. multiple different names for that. But having those resources, and so what I see the biggest hurdle that franchisors run into is that they're so focused on driving profitability on the franchisor level, and what they're doing is they're not putting a strong focus on investing 100%, if not more, of all of the revenue that's coming into the business into building a solid foundation and ongoing launching ramp for your people to be successful. Because you have to look at it like, you know, a freight train leaving the station. Once the train leaves the station, keep feeding the machine, and you've got to keep pouring the resources into it. And that's one of the things that I've always done that's very different, and get involved at a lot of the various industry events that we attend. I mean, Wes, we've been accustomed prior to COVID to seeing each other at least once a month at a different industry event. And yep. one of the things that I continuously hear, which is rewarding as CEO and founder of organizations, to hear, is like, when I'm talking about what we do for our franchisees, people are going, wow, you do that? Or like, mm-hmm. that's way more than we do. Or like, I can't believe you offer all that. Or it's like, what do you charge for that service? And we're like, it's included. That's just part of the value they get as a franchisee in the organization. And so it's very rewarding to go back and recognize that, you know what, I'm sitting here and I'm, you know, and I'm constantly raising the bar on myself, and the organization is raising the bar on itself to really hit that operational excellence that we talk about. And so that's just a few pieces of it. And I'm sure Zach has so much more to add to that.
When I want to hear Zach's thoughts. A couple things though I want to mention. I mean, it's rewarding for you to get that type of feedback, but it also makes good business sense for you to provide that kind of higher level, more robust support for your franchisees. Because as Zach mentioned earlier, you guys look at this the right way. You view it as a long-term partnership with your franchisees. Right? Franchisors that look at the revenue that they get from franchise fees up front, that's very short-sighted, right? The way a good franchisor can make money over the long term is by having a lot of very highly successful franchisees, right? The better you support them, the higher the likelihood that they're going to be very, very successful. So I love that. And the other thing that you mentioned several times, which I think is so key, is culture, right? And that's something that I know in my experience, a lot of people overlook as they're investigating a franchise, or they at least don't prioritize it the way that they should, is they're not really digging in to figure out, you know, what type of a culture does this franchise system have? And am I a good fit culturally? Because that's huge. You know, if you plug into a franchise system that's a good, number one, that has a good, strong culture, and that number two, you're a good cultural fit with, that can catapult you as a new franchisee out of the gates. It may not be quite as tangible as some of the other forms of support that you expect to get as a franchisee, but plugging into a good culture that lines up with your values as a franchisee, to me, is one of the biggest benefits that you can have as a franchisee, both in the short term and the long term.
Yeah. So, you know, I'll speak to it as a franchisee first, you know, from a franchisee mindset. From a franchisee perspective, when it comes to franchisor support, if the phone rings off the hook, in their mind, they're getting all the support they need.
Yeah.
And I've been a franchisee, and that's the exact model you have. Things are, we're doing awesome. And franchisor is great. Phones ring off the hook. I mean, there could be no other support besides that. And that's a huge game changer. But I think from what I've noticed, there's three or four things. The customer acquisition strategy is huge. Mm-hmm. Not just initially, but markets are different, industries are different, and people are different. But you got to get the phone to ring for your franchisees. Because if they don't, then they're going to be really trying to dial in operational efficiencies.
Yep.
And that's where they're going to try to squeeze a dollar out of 10 cents, which just doesn't work. So making sure that your customer acquisition strategy obviously works and is ever changing. We learned that with Complete Nutrition. We were spending around $10,000 in advertising, and we were the only ones doing that in that industry. But what would happen is we would turn on the radio and it would just blow up. It was easy. I mean, it was literally, I'm sitting here saying it was easy to do $1 million in revenue because that advertising worked. Mm-hmm. When it didn't work, the franchisor had absolutely no secondary strategy to generate leads, nothing.
Yeah.
And that's really where that brand really seemed its end. So that's one thing that from a franchise development standpoint, you really have to make, not just look out, well, how am I going to sell franchises now, but how are you going to sell franchises 12, 18, 24 months from now? And because those people that you place right away are going to be stressed out learning the industry, the business. But if you can make sure that you really ramp up their gross revenues and profits, they're going to be great validators and you're going to have great numbers in your FTD. So customer acquisition is definitely one of the first. Another one that Josh, we just talked about this the other day, and we do this with Redbox Plus and Monster Tree, is the model the franchisor sells, or the business model that you're buying into, is going to be different that every month and every year after that. It's always going to constantly improve. But to get your franchisees to adopt new best practices or software or marketing strategies is also not easy.
No.
So having a process where you're monitoring and evaluating franchisees based on, are they offering the current best practice, and then letting those that, you know, Wes, hey, you're a franchisee, you're not doing the best of the things that make franchisees the most successful. Here's what they are, and we're documenting those just so that you know that.
Yeah.
That way you can kind of bring those to light.
Well, I would add to that, you know, making sure as a franchisor you have good systems and processes in place to facilitate best practices, right? So that, you know, if one franchisee in a certain part of the country is just absolutely killing it in a certain area of the business, that you've got a good process to share that with the rest of the system and make it easier for them to adopt that, right? Because in the franchisee's mindset, it's always one thing if the home office or the corporate office or whatever you want to call it is saying, hey, you should do this, it's a best practice. You know, that's one thing. They might take it with a grain of salt. Whereas if it's coming from another franchisee who's actually seeing results, that's a whole nother thing, right? The level of adoption is going to be much higher if they're getting it from the other franchisees. So for me, one thing I look for is like, how is the franchisor, and it kind of comes back to culture, but how is the franchisor set the organization up so that franchisees can learn from each other and share best practices with each other and kind of, you know, cultivate this culture of shared learning amongst their franchisees. To me, that's invaluable if that's executed properly by the franchisor.
Wes, Zach brings up a good point. You mentioned validation, and you know you're moving the needle in the right direction and moving forward as a franchisor when you have candidates continuously mention that in the validation process they're hearing from franchisees that started in the business 6 months ago, 12 months ago, 18 months ago, that all are mentioning the business today is far more advanced than what it was even when I got in 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Because you're continuously raising that bar to do, you know, better and better as you're, you know, ongoing and growing in the business. So it's something we really put a strong focus on. And like Zach said, that customer acquisition strategy in the service space, understanding how are you acquiring customers and not just taking the easy road of going, well, here's a way that works today. You know, we're always thinking ahead and, you know, planning what is going to work 6 months from now, 12 months from now, and 18 months from now, and continuously working with the franchisees to make sure that we're surveying them and understanding, you know, what's happening in their business. And we find a lot of that out, not only through our regular business review calls that we do with each one of our franchisees, but also through the various peer groups that we can establish. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sharing metrics. I mean, one of the things you always hear talked about in franchising is KPIs and, you know, unit economics. And so, you know, people, that's like the most exciting part of the development process for a franchise candidate is when they can get into unit economics and knowing your business and knowing your numbers. And like Zach and I will always tell you that, you know, every time you hear from a franchisee that's frustrated, when you ask them about their numbers, they don't know them. And so Zach hit on earlier, like he was doing $11 million in revenue. And he's like, I thought I was lighting the world on fire because $11 million a year in revenue is passing through my pockets. But guess what? If you're not monitoring what's happening, what's left at the end of the day? And so that's where we're constantly sharing those metrics. So as a system, we're having, you know, leaderboards and all kinds of, you know, data that we're sharing with the franchisees to show this is exactly how you're measuring up against your peers and where you are in this point in the business. And we live in a world that everything in society today is data driven. So there's two things that are prevalent in, you know, not only America, but the world now: data. And then additionally, it's instant gratification. People want everything now. You know, you think about Amazon, Uber, everything that you have access to get just that instant gratification, on-demand society. And so we're trying to develop our systems in the same way and sort of, you know, how do we start to even consider bringing things like artificial intelligence into our business so that we can predict better exactly what's going to happen with each one of the franchisees. And the only way you can get to that point is to measure and maintain all of the metrics within your business.
One of our franchises, we've got excellent data and metrics, and they kind of give us benchmarks, right? I mean, we can see how we compare to other franchisees. So it's good, you know, so that you can kind of see, all right, am I performing above average? Am I average? Am I below average? It also kind of gamifies it, right? I mean, it creates kind of some healthy competition, I think, amongst franchisees where, you know, people are tracking and they're looking at these things. And, you know, if one franchisee's outpacing us in a certain month, you know, that lights a little fire under our ass to go get after it a little bit more, just for the sake of some healthy competition.
Well, Wes, I think there's one big thing that Josh talked on, and that's data.
Yeah.
I think I've worked on 7 brands now, and we've looked at several hundred others, and it's just shocking when you're talking to franchisors and you say, well, how much money are your franchisees making? And they don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, they say, well, you know, we haven't pulled the numbers for the FDD yet. I go, but they could all be losing money right now. And you're sitting here saying that you want to sell 100 the first year. I said that's an issue. And, you know, that's where, you know, what we, Josh and I, with the new brand, we have universal accounting, standard chart of accounts, and artificial intelligence that brings all of that from a financial KPI revenue, puts it all into one place. And, you know, that's where people can say, well, man, I am spending too much on my fuel, or I am spending too much on my advertising compared to everyone else.
Yeah.
And that's beyond the second part. The first part is just knowing. And most franchisors don't even know that.
Well, and to that point, a lot of franchisees don't know their numbers, but the franchisor can at least put the right tools in place so that if the franchisee doesn't know their numbers, it's shame on them, right? They have access to everything they need to know their numbers inside and out and know exactly where their business is, where they have opportunity to improve. So yeah, I think to your point, there definitely are franchisors out there that they couldn't tell you, you know, if their franchisees are making money, losing money, or kind of where they're at. And that's a shame, I think. So, you know, you guys, and I know that Zach, you've got a hard stop coming up here in a few minutes. So I want to hit on a couple of other things, and we'll have to, there's so much to talk about with you guys. So we'll have to schedule a round two of this at some point, but you know, you talked a lot about some of the key components of a good franchisor, right? But let's talk about franchisees for a minute, right? And you've both mentioned, you know, making sure it's a good fit before you, and I love how you guys use the term award versus sell when you talk about franchises, right? So what are you guys looking for in your experience? And I get that it'll vary a little bit depending on the specific business in terms of maybe the skill set that you're looking for, but more generally speaking, what are characteristics that you're looking for in a candidate to say, all right, we're confident this person could be a great franchisee with one of our brands?
The first big one, and it's so consistent, is that a candidate, you know, this is just an observation. So the whoever's running franchise development for a brand is the first line of defense between the wrong franchisee. Mm-hmm. And they should be able to spot that early, but franchisees that don't do well, or candidates that don't do well as franchisees, are very difficult to work with across in the process.
Yeah.
They don't, yeah. You know, they tend to not want to follow your process. They're just difficult, and they can be frustrating in your development process. And those candidates should never ever make it to that next step. You know, early on, when you first have your franchise brand, you unfortunately always end up, for some reason or another, awarding some franchises to people like that.
Yeah.
And Josh could probably tell you stories, but not a single one of those candidates, and I mean 100% of them, have been terrible franchisees. So that's a big one. And you can typically tell that pretty early. I actually just had a call with a guy this morning that I called his consultant and said, not a chance in hell. The second part is the ability to make decisions without 100% of the data. So the kind of the spiel that I would always get is, we're going to get you to 80% of the way to your decision. That you're never going to get farther than that, no matter what you do. And so you're going to have to be able to make a decision, yes or no, on that amount of data or that, yeah, on that feeling. And the successful business owners can make a decision without having 100% of the information. Even if they're wrong, they can pivot, change direction, and still be successful because they have that skill set. And that is something that, you know, when people get towards the end and they know they don't have it all and they're scared, the people that really start to drag their feet typically aren't as successful as the guys that just say, I can do this, I believe, I trust you guys, let's get this done.
Well, because I was going to say, I mean, that 20%, a big part of that is just believing in yourself, right? That I have the ability to execute, right? It's having the confidence to invest in yourself. And I don't care what you're talking about, you're never going to be able to tell someone that about themselves. They're always going to have to look inward and figure out if they have what it takes or not.
You have to, Wes, not to cut you off there, but you have to understand, as Zach said, the way that somebody from a franchisee's perspective, the way that they act through the process is a clear indication of exactly how they will be as an owner. So if they procrastinate, they are not going to be punctual once they buy a business. You know, if they have fear, they're not going to have confidence once they buy a business. You know, it's understandable that through the process, there is a level of fear that we all have. You are not human if you don't have any fear at all. With that being said, you know, one of the things that I always say is that as a business owner, you have to be able to make decisions, make them with confidence, and live with them. Understand that you are never going to make all the right decisions. You will make mistakes, but you have to have the self-awareness and drive to be able to persevere to overcome them. And, you know, some of those mistakes are going to cost you time. Some of those mistakes are going to cost you money. But these are all the things that there's no business owner that you will ever meet, and there's no opportunity in franchising out there that you're going to get into a validation process and not hear some level of pain, because there is absolutely work to start a business.
Yep.
And you have to realize that if you just put your head down, and I say this to so many people in my leadership calls and my CEO one-on-one calls, I say, if you put your head down for the next 24 months and work harder than you've ever worked in your life, you will be blown away at what will come out on the back end of that. And the level of success and satisfaction that you're going to get out of this business. But if you sit around for the next 24 months and wait for it to turn in the right direction for you, guess what you're going to have at the end of 24 months? The same thing that you started with. And it's the definition of insanity, doing the same thing again and again and again and getting the exact same result. So if you're losing money at the end of your first month, in month two, you need to evaluate, what are the things that are costing me money and what do I need to do to change my business? And that's why we step in on the franchisor level, and we step in and we tell people right out of the gate when they execute an agreement with us, there are going to be uncomfortable conversations and you may be offended of some of them at some point, but when it puts your business in the right direction, because we had to have an uncomfortable conversation, and Zach calls this carefrontational, and you're going to thank us. You're going to thank us down the road that we made you turn over those rocks that are costing you money. And yep. We made you address those items that might have been outside of your comfort zone, and put pride to the side, because your pride's going to be really hurt if you don't make it. And we've done this dance many times, and we've built very successful franchisees within the organization. Sit back, enjoy the ride, and drink the Kool-Aid.
Yeah. I love that, man. So inspirational. And I like what you talk about in terms of, like, if you sit here for 24 months hesitating on making a decision, you're going to be there with the exact same situation you're in. And one of the things I've started talking with people about is, yeah, it's risky to start a business, right? To Zach's point, you're never going to have all of the information. We don't have a crystal ball to know exactly how this is going to play out. But at the same time, what's riskier, that or doing nothing? Right? It's opportunity cost, right? What's the bigger risk? You try it and it doesn't work out exactly the way you would hope, but it still puts you in a better situation, or you stay exactly where you are. And for a lot of the people, especially people we're talking to right now that after COVID, they've been furloughed or laid off, if they don't make some sort of a decision, it's a lot riskier to just stay put wherever they are. If they were to find themselves in the same spot a year from now, they're going to be in, pretty dire circumstances in a lot of cases. And I agree that people that tend to procrastinate and put off making a decision with all the what ifs, if they do ever get into business for themselves, they tend to act the exact same way when it's time to make decisions. And in business, you have to be decisive. It doesn't mean you're always going to make the right choice, but you have to be decisive. You can't procrastinate. And, Zach, to your point, what other investment opportunity out there are you going to get basically 80% of the data before you make the investment? Not many.
Savings account.
Yeah. Savings account. Maybe that's about it. Right. So it's, 80% is pretty good when you compare it to most of the other investment opportunities out there. One other thing that I want to get you guys' thoughts on, and you're already kind of, hitting on some of this right now, but Josh, you pointed out it's human nature, right? Anytime someone's going through a process, whether it's investigating a franchise or just considering making that step out of their comfort zone to start a business, the fear, the uncertainty, the doubt, that starts to creep in. I mean, you guys have both been involved in numerous ventures, over the years. What are some of the tips and tricks that you've learned to help yourself get comfortable getting uncomfortable? And what advice might you have to the aspiring entrepreneur that's struggling with getting out of their comfort zone? They know they need to make this transition, but they're just kind of right there on the edge, teetering a little bit.
The big thing is, as we hit on a little bit earlier, it's confidence. It's understanding that if you're looking for 100% confidence, just stop. You've got to look yourself in the mirror. And I've said this to so many people, I do ahead of every discovery day that we host, I have a one-on-one call for a minimum of 30 minutes with every candidate in attendance. And I've said to a few of them, when you get off this call, you need to go look yourself in the mirror and realize that the real the real risk in this whole venture is you. It's yourself. Yeah. And you've got to look yourself in the mirror and say, I've got what it takes. I'm going to get up in the morning, because guess what? Business ownership gives you an unbelievable level of freedom that you will never experience as an employee of an organization. Mm-hmm. And so, but what you have to understand is the franchisor is 50% of the equation. We can give you the best systems, the best processes, a world-class product and support to go out there and be successful with. If you don't do the right things with it, it's never going to go anywhere for you. So you've got to understand that you've got to get out of bed in the morning and you've got to drive that business. You've got to be willing to build it. And like I said earlier, about working the hardest that you've ever had, that you ever have over the next 24 months in that initial first 2 years of launching your business. If you do that, you will be very successful. And one of the things that Zach and I often talk about is that, you know, what brings us the greatest joy in the job that we have on the development side, and then obviously being involved on the operations side, is that we are in the business of building financial worth, building freedom, and giving people something that they'll never get back, and that's time. Hear those stories from franchisees and listen to them talk about, you know, coaching their kids' sports teams and being involved within the community and giving back. I mean, those are the reasons why we do what we do. Regardless of what your own personal religious beliefs are, I believe you get one shot at life and you got to make the most of it. And while you're here, you want to be able to do as much. You want to be able to provide for your family, spend time with them. We all have kids on this call. Zach's daughter's 2 weeks old. Wes, you've got your second child on the way. I've got three kids, 6, 7, and 8 years old. And let me tell you something, man. It feels like just yesterday I was standing in the maternity ward with my wife having our first daughter. And, you know, I look at her today and she'll be 9 in September. And I say to myself, like, man, they grow so fast. And I myself, even as an entrepreneur, I'm guilty of sometimes, you know, working too much. Zach mentioned early about how we're constantly on the phone. You know, him and his wife are drinking a bottle of Josh wine at dinner because he can't get enough. But at some point, you just got to be willing to say, I'm going to turn it off. But at the same time, there's a level of confidence to know that you're going to be successful in what you're doing, and just take control. You know, and that's one of the biggest questions I get in all the conversations I have with potential candidates is, you know, why franchising? Why did you choose to franchise these businesses? You've had such a great track record of building corporate locations and being very successful and becoming 800-pound gorillas within markets that you run those. And I tell people, I say, you know what it is to me, that's very shallow. It's greed. I don't want to keep all the wealth for myself. I want to share it with other people. And I want to take people that didn't realize that they could be as successful with no experience within an industry and get out there and, you know, and get that time and that freedom and build that financial wealth within one of the operating systems that I'm running. So, and I know Zach has so much more that he can add to that.
Yeah. Well, I love it, man. And I mean, that's what the path to freedom is all about, right? I mean, it's taking control and, you know, like you said, we've got one shot at this life, right? I had a guest on the podcast a few months ago and he said, you know, a mentor put it to him one time. He's like, look, you can just kind of cruise through life or you can flex on the world. I'm trying to flex on the world. So that's kind of stuck with me. But yeah, Zach, definitely want to hear your thoughts and what you might add to that.
I had one of these today, believe it or not. Husband and wife couple, 59 years old, wife 62. And they said that our daughter is, you know, mid-20s and said that we absolutely shouldn't do this. I'm 59. I'm unhirable. I'm from the car industry. You know, like, do you think we should do this? And I said, I can't tell you that.
Yeah.
I can say, you know, if you're worried about what will happen, let's talk about it. What's the worst thing that could happen? And I asked them, what's the worst thing that can happen? And they said, well, it might not work. I go, okay, let's say it doesn't work. And you got to shut it down. What do we do then? You're going to resell this equipment. You're going to try to relist the business. Here's what we would do. And now here's what the financial, here's what the debt financially would look like, but at least you tried.
That's right.
But a lot of times people actually don't calculate what is the worst thing that could happen. And
they drastically overestimate the worst case scenario.
It's never as bad as they think it would. And it was like, that's a good point. But, you know, back to your point, Josh, is that, you know, all I've ever done is really own my own business. And I've always, you know, been an 80 to 90 hour week guy. And I've always liked that. But man, there's only one way to get experience. There's only one way. You can read all the business books you want. You can read 100 of them and go open a business and then fall flat on your face, but you got to live it. Yeah. And being a business owner makes you, you know, a better employee in my mind, because you're, it's just a different mindset.
Yeah.
Well, no, I agree. You hit the nail on the head when you said you can either coast through life or you can flex on the world. I like that. I've never heard that before.
Yeah.
And I'm going to leave you with a story that I think puts this all into perspective. And, you know, we've told a few different stories on this podcast today, but you know, I'm going to tell you about my uncle Jim when he was on his deathbed. And, you know, he was terminally ill, and he had done just coasting through life, and, you know, had a great career working for an organization, but he always wanted to own his own business, but he never took that leap of faith. And, you know, I was, you know, building businesses, and I was becoming very successful. And, you know, I was in my 20s at the time. And he says to me, he goes, "You know what, Josh," he goes, "I sit here today and I lay here in this bed knowing that my days are numbered. And the biggest regret I have is that I never took the chance." And he never went out there and he never took the risk, you know? And that's what you really have to ask yourself when you're thinking about business ownership is, do you, you know, are you going to regret this? Because we've said it a dozen times, you can never get that time back. So even if there's a high level of fear, go for it. Because especially in the things that Zach and I are involved with and the integrity that we operate with, you know, have 100% of the franchisees in the businesses that I'm involved with been successful? No. But have any of the ones that haven't made it exited with dignity and been made as whole as possible and had an opportunity to sell off any equipment at fair market value? Absolutely. And so that's what you've got to look at. And like Zach's story about his candidate he was working with this morning is a perfect one.
Yeah.
You know, we can't tell you what to do, but what we can do is we can share plenty of stories with you, good and bad, but the success stories far outweigh those bad ones. And, you know, just grab the bull by the horns and go with it.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, and to me, and I think having kids has put this in perspective for me some, but, you know, my biggest fear now is the fear of regret, right? I don't want to get to the end of my life, whenever that is, and just have nothing but regret of things I wanted to do or, you know, thought about doing and never did, right? I mean, you know, money is a part of this, I think, for any entrepreneur, but it's certainly not all of it, right? I mean, it really comes down to life and how you want to live your life and what sort of experience you want to have. And then, you know, for us as parents, it's also, what are you teaching your kids, right? When they see you taking risk and, you know, having confidence in yourself and, you know, if you decide you want to do something, going for it and figuring it out, right? I mean, the one guarantee is in business ownership, it won't go perfectly. It never will, but it's, you know, how are you able to adapt and overcome? And I think, you know, the more we as people put ourselves in situations that make us uncomfortable, that's how you grow, right? And I think that's what life is really about, is like continuously growing and trying to get better and learning. So let's hit the lightning round. Zach, if you want to take this first question of the lightning round is, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received? That could be in business or life advice.
Also, so this is, since you brought up Ryan Zink, I will bring up a recent comment that I learned from him. And we were doing some things together, and he said, "I much more value the return of my time than I do the return of my investment." And that is something that always stuck with me, that I always think about, is like, man, I'm working way too many hours and not focusing on being efficient. So that was a big one.
That's good. Wise guy, that Ryan Zink. All right, second question. Do you have a morning routine of any sort? Anything that you try to do every morning to prime yourself for a successful day?
I do. I'm not living it right now. I typically try to wake up, have my, I'm not a big coffee guy, so I drink my energy drink, and I sit in my chair, and I typically would either read a chapter of a book, or if I'm whatever project on that is the fun project, I call it, I try to do a little research on that in the mornings.
Nice. Nice. I love it. What book are you reading right now?
I'm reading They Ask, You Answer, A Revolutionary Approach to Inbound Sales, Content Marketing, and Today's Digital Consumer.
Very nice. I love it. All right. Final question. What is your definition of freedom, and are you living it?
My definition of freedom is getting to work really hard at exactly what you want to work on, when you want to work on it. That would be my definition of freedom. Even if you do want to work, then am I living it right now? I'm not, but I'm getting there. And I think that's where you got to work towards.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a constant, evolution, I feel like. So, All right, Josh, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Trust yourself.
Yeah. Well, like, I love doing these lightning round questions, right? Because everyone that comes on the podcast, I get to hear their answers to the same questions. And that's the single one that's come up the most times. Trust yourself, invest in yourself, some version of that. Definitely a common thread between successful people. So, all right, do you have a morning routine, something that you try to do every morning to prime yourself for a successful day?
Yep, get up before the rooster calls.
I like it. Early, what's
I'm up before I'm up before everybody else. That's what I do. Just like Zach, I like to get up before everybody else, get my best work done, and just get a jump start on the day.
No doubt. Well, hey, Zach, you'll learn this here pretty soon if you're not already. Once kids are in the picture, you got to wake up early before they wake up so you can actually get a little bit of quiet time and get some things done.
What if they never go to bed?
Yeah, you're at that phase right now where there will probably be some sleepless nights, my friend. Hopefully they're few and far between, though. Josh, what book are you reading right now?
Simon Sinek, The Infinite Game. If you haven't read it yet, I strongly suggest you do. Give you a lot of perspective on the way you think as a business owner and the way that you look at competition.
Yeah, that's a good one. I read it right before the IFA conference because he was speaking. He was the keynote at IFA back in, what was that, February? So yes. I read it, and then his keynote, you know, featured a lot of what he talked about in the book. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, definitely a good read for sure. All right, then, final question. What is your definition of freedom, and are you living it?
Doing what you want, when you want. And my classic line is killing it, living the dream, man.
All right, I love it. We could probably just end it right there on that line. But no, guys, tell anyone that's interested where they can connect with you guys, where they can find out more about, you know, all of your businesses if they want to learn more.
Yeah, so Monster Tree Service, you can find it at ymonster.com. Redbox Plus is redboxplus.com. And obviously Josh Skolnick and Zach Butler, both available all social media platforms, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram.
You'll see the same profile picture for both of them, so don't let that confuse you. They're both in it. And then, Zach, you want to give a quick plug for your cattle company, your beef company?
Oh, yeah. So, well, you can't forget mightydogroofing.com as well, Josh.
And yeah.
Butler Beef, best beef in the country, raised in northeast Nebraska. Go to butlerbeef.com, spelled B-E-U-T-L-E-R-E.
Yeah, and I've been following you on Instagram. Your tomahawks look amazing. I'm going to order one today.
Nice.
Or probably two. Probably wouldn't make sense to order just one.
Good. And Zach, good call. I left out mightydogroofing.com and a lot more information on the opportunity becoming available next month. But get over there. If there is interest, fill out the request form because there is a lot of interest coming in on that opportunity and some great things to come.
Awesome. Well, look, I love it. I just want to quickly acknowledge you guys. You've both had a huge impact on me. Feel very fortunate to have met you guys. You're inspiring. Every time I talk to you, I get fired up. So really appreciate you making time to do this. And I'm glad we were able to chat. And we'll link all of your websites in the show notes as well. But can't thank you guys enough for dropping in on the Path to Freedom podcast with me.
See you, Wes.
Thanks, Wes.
Thanks for dropping in with me on this episode of the Path to Freedom podcast. I hope you got a ton of value and learned something new. And if you did, please make sure to subscribe and follow the Path to Freedom podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And also, please share with someone else that may also get value from it. And if you're interested in learning more about how you can take steps to getting into business for yourself, I'd love to speak with you. Connect with me online at pathtofreedom.com. That's path, the number two, FRDM.com, or shoot me an email at wes@pathtofreedom.com, spelled the same way. And if you know anyone else that may be interested in speaking with me, I'd love to meet them. Please forward this podcast along to them and encourage them to reach out. Thanks again for joining me today, and I'll see you next time. Now go drop in.